sitting at the table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Succession.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Privacy.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum,
identity,
family,
home,
conscience,
expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
leisure,
health,
education,
progress,
culture,
human rights,
Cartagena,
solidarity.
Fill in the border. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings with my co-host Gordon Barnes, and today we're talking about Sisters in Spirit. Sisters in Spirit is an annual gathering to recognize, honor, and remember the hundreds of Indigenous women who've gone missing or have been murdered in past years. And on October 4th at First Nations University of Canada in Regina, Indigenous and non-Indigenous people alike will take part in ceremonies and listen to speakers to try to increase awareness of this important issue. Good morning, Gordon.
Morning, Jim. It's good to be back to Human Rights Radio, and welcome to everybody who's tuning in this afternoon. And
it's a nice, bright, sunshiny day, and we're wrapping up Radiothon today.
That's right. It was a little cool last night, you know, but I actually didn't cover up my flowers of the geraniums. I thought, well,
the geraniums are tough.
Yeah, they survived the night. That's the big news. It's good. Yeah.
Right.
So, did you want to just let everybody know about the big news on Radiothon and give the information about that at the top of the hour here?
Sure. Well, let's do that right now. First of all, the big news is the winner of the $100 gift certificate. This is one of the daily draws that has been happening all week long to people who have pledged their support for CJTR Radio, Community Radio 91.3. And the certificate to the Lancaster Tap House. That was yesterday's draw, and the winner is Joshua Ricker. I think I'm pronouncing his name right here. Joshua Ricker. Congratulations to Joshua, and thank you very much for your support to Regina Community Radio. And so we've got one more. You still have a chance to win a daily prize. And our prize today, and this is a $100 gift certificate for chocolates by Bernard Calabo. So if you really enjoy the chocolate products at from Bernard Calabot. They're right in the cathedral area there. I'm sure you've wandered by. I think I take all mine in Ice Cream Gourd. They've got great ice cream there.
But the best.
Yeah. But they do have wonderful chocolate there as well. And a $100 gift certificate, that would be great for, I don't know, Christmas or special occasions, or if you just like chocolate and you want to go and overload on chocolate right now, a $100 gift certificate for Bernard Calabot chocolates. Wonderful. So if you want to, and why wouldn't you want to, help support CJTR, here's what you do. You can call in right now. We've got somebody on the phone ready to take your call and make a pledge. You don't have to honor your pledge right today. You can call in and tell us what you want to donate. And we have special incentives here. Besides the daily draw, which you'll be a part of if you donate at least $25, that you're also eligible for the big grand prize draw to a trip to Puerto Vallarta. I'm just looking for the information here. I should have it right in front of me, but I don't. But anyway, it's courtesy of, here we go. It's courtesy of Carlson Wagenly Record Travel and Nolly Tours. And it's a trip to Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, which includes airfare from and to the Regina Airport. It's an all-inclusive week-long vacation for two at the four-star Canto del Sol Plaza Vallarta in Puerto Vallarta. And it will be a week filled with sunshine, fun, and relaxation. I have been to Puerto Vallarta at least once. I'm just trying to think. No, I was there once on a. I was once to Puerto Vallarta on a cruise. It was a port of call. And then when my son got married a few years ago, they got married at a nice resort just a little bit north from Puerto Vallarta. Just a wonderful place to visit, Gord.
Well, it's a great way to support community radio and all a fabulous variety of spoken word programs on community radio on CJTR.
Absolutely.
And also the music programs. You know, one of the things I personally like about community radio and CJTR is just that, the amazing range of music and spoken word programming. So it does take community support to keep this going. So you could phone in right now and make a contribution for Radiothon, and maybe just fire off that number for everybody one more time, Jim.
Okay, it should be around here somewhere. Oh, there it is. 525-7274.
All right, I'm sure the phones are going to start ringing. We'll give that number out again before the end of the program.
Right, don't forget to put 306 in front of it. Oh, one other thing that I forgot to mention is if you pledge $50, you get yourself a memory stick with CJTR printed on it. It's really cool. And if you pledge $100, then you get a T-shirt, one of those fabulous CJTR 2014 Radiothon T-shirts. So, you can mix and match. If you give $100, if you didn't want a T-shirt, you could have two of those memory sticks. So, it's great. And also, for every $25, you get an entry. Okay, so for the daily draw, if you're interested in the Bernard Calabot chocolates, if you pledged $100, not only are you going to get a T-shirt or two memory stick drives, but you get four entries in the draw for the daily prize for the chocolates and four entries for that trip for two to Puerto Vallarta, courtesy of Carlson Wagenly Rickert Travel and Nolly Tours. So it's well worth taking part just for that. And of course, you're supporting community radio, and I have to tell you, CJTR has been on the air in radio for over a decade. And as Gord was saying, just delivering the mix of music and spoken word shows that cannot be heard anywhere else on Regina Radio.
So I think the other thing you were saying is we were planning to spend a good portion of this program today on Human Rights Radio talking about the need to address the what I think is probably one of the most significant human rights concerns across Canada, that I think there's just no doubt in the public's mind that this is something that we need to come together as a people, First Nations people, people who are not First Nations, and join together really to, mm-hmm. to address the issue of violence against Indigenous women in Canada. And just as we reflect on that, I wanted to note that this is actually the 10th anniversary of the release of the Stolen Sisters report. And that's why tomorrow on October 4th across Canada there will be vigils in hundreds and hundreds of communities. It's recognized now well over 1,000 murdered and missing First Nations women. 10 years ago, when the first report was released, it's really quite tragic to reflect on this, because on the release of the report 10 years ago, Alex Neave, who's the Secretary General of Amnesty International Canada, stood on Parliament Hill, and he was joined by Darlene Osborne. It was her teenage granddaughter who had disappeared and was later found dead in Winnipeg's Red River. And that he was joined 10 years ago now by Darlene Osborne. And they were at that on that occasion releasing the major report that had been done that documented the violence against Indigenous women in Canada. It's particularly tragic to reflect on that, because it was just quite recently that another teenage Aboriginal girl, her body was found also in the Red River just last month, Tina Fontaine. And it has sparked yet again renewed calls for an inquiry and a more effective strategy to address this human rights crisis in Canada. And I think, Jim, you were going to share with us an opinion piece that's been co-authored by Alex and Alex Neave and Bev Jacobs, who is the Bev was the lead researcher for the original Stolen Sisters report. So if you wanted to do that, and
sure. 10 years ago, when Amnesty International released its first research report, and this is Beverly Jacobs and Alex Neave writing this. It was an article that they contributed to the Globe and Mail. We stood alongside family members who asked, how many more sisters and daughters do we have to lose before governments take real and meaningful action? We never imagined that this heartfelt plea for justice, dignity, and human rights would be met by such appalling government indifference. When Amnesty International released the Stolen Sisters report in October of 2004, the Native Women's Association of Canada had already been campaigning to focus attention on the uncounted hundreds of Indigenous women and girls who had been murdered or gone missing in Canada. We now know from recently released RCMP statistics that in the decade that followed the release of the Stolen Sisters report, dozens more Indigenous women and girls were murdered every year, with more than 105 remaining missing under suspicious circumstances or for undetermined reasons. Due to significant gaps in police reporting, it's also clear that many more deaths and disappearances are likely absent from RCMP figures. Such widespread and pervasive violence demands a comprehensive national response, aimed not at just bringing the perpetrators to justice, but also at preventing this violence in the first place. This has not happened. In mid-September, the federal government announced what it claimed was an action plan to address violence against Indigenous women. It was really only a re-announcement of existing programs and initiatives, best described as piecemeal and inadequate. Looking back on the last decade, we're heartened by the growing demand for real action to stop violence against Indigenous women. The annual October 4th Sisters in Spirit vigils have become a nationwide movement for human rights and justice embraced by Indigenous and non-Indigenous people alike. Momentum is clearly building. At the same time, we're deeply concerned by the partisan nature of so much of the public debate. All too frequently, those who want to defend the government's record distort the facts, reducing complex issues to a simple call to catch and punish the perpetrators. An ugly undertone has emerged that blames Indigenous communities or the victims themselves. Over and over again, we're told that almost all murders of Indigenous women were carried out by someone known to the victim. This, in fact, is true of all violence against women, Indigenous and non-Indigenous alike. There are, however, striking differences that Canadians must understand and confront if this violence is ever going to be stopped. Indigenous women and girls are approximately 3.5 times more likely than non-Indigenous women to be murdered by a spouse, former partner, or a family member. Family violence is a horrendous reality requiring greater knowledge, and much greater efforts to address. But it's not the entire story. RCMP statistics show that Indigenous women and girls are roughly 7 times more likely than non-Indigenous women to be killed by an acquaintance, such as a friend, a co-worker, a neighbor, or an authority figure. Government programs and policies have largely failed to acknowledge or come to terms with this important dimension of the threats to Indigenous women's lives. Violence against Indigenous women takes place in the home and in the streets of Canadian cities. Attacks on Indigenous women are committed by Indigenous men and non-Indigenous men, and these men are often helped by others who aid them in their crimes or help cover up the truth. In other words, violence against Indigenous women is complex and multifaceted. It has to be understood in the context of centuries of dispossession, marginalization, and impoverishment of Indigenous women, their families, and their communities, as well as the ongoing paternalistic relationship between Indigenous peoples and the Canadian state. Oversimplification of these issues may serve a political agenda, but it does not serve the women and girls whose lives are at risk. International human rights standards require governments to take every reasonable effort to prevent violence against women. Governments that fail to do so bear responsibility for some of the suffering and loss that they could have prevented. In our view, 2 broad measures are needed to fulfill this responsibility. A truly comprehensive and coordinated national action plan and an independent public inquiry to ensure that government responses are based on Indigenous women's real needs. There is unprecedented agreement that these are steps to be taken, including among Canadian premiers, human rights commissions, UN experts, and many of our closest allies. These measures cannot be put off any longer, not when the lives of so many women and girls are at stake. This is an article that was written by Beverly Jacobs and Alex Neve. Beverly Jacobs was the lead researcher on Amnesty International's Stolen Sisters report and is a former president of the Native Women's Association of Canada. And, of course, Alex Neve is the Secretary General of Amnesty International Canada.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Jim. And I think it's worth mentioning once again that in Regina on Saturday, October 4th, the annual Sisters in Spirit gathering will be at the First Nations University of Canada. Everybody in the community is welcome to participate. At 4 o'clock, there will be a traditional pipe ceremony and feast. And at 6, there will be a candlelight vigil. And then at 7, a round dance. It's probably a good idea to dress warm because
yes.
Part of the program will be outside. But at the same time, a good portion will be inside. And for anyone who might be listening, if you've never attended one of the vigils, everyone is so welcoming. I would encourage people in the community to come together and show your support, because really the most important aspect of the day tomorrow and the vigil will be honoring the lives of the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, and trying to provide community support for the families. Families who have lost mums, sisters, and daughters. And in that respect, even in Regina, there are the list of families who have lost family members is really quite significant. Personally, I would note a few of the names of women who are either missing or murdered, but this is by no means an extensive list, the complete list, I mean. I got to know Amber Redmond's family very well. She went missing was later found murdered at... she was missing from Fort Capel, and later it was recognized that she was murdered. I participated with her family and other community members in some of the marches that took place, organized by community and family, from Port Capel to Standing Buffalo. I'd also want to recognize and mention Diane Big Eagle, because Diane's daughter, Danita, has been missing for several years now. Diane has been tireless in continuing to find what happened with Danita, and I know she needs as much support from the community and as possible. Another terrible event in Regina history was when Pamela George was murdered. And I mention that because she was murdered by two men who were students at the time of the University of Regina. And, you know, there were actually media reports at the time that referred to them as boys, but they were men, and members of the community here in Regina, students at the University of Regina. And we cannot... you know, ignore the fact that Pamela George was a mum and a daughter. She had people who loved her in the community and her family. And we need to join with the families of all the women, if we can, tomorrow evening. That's October 4th at the First Nations University. As I say, it would be great if people can attend as well. At 4 o'clock, the traditional pipe ceremony and feast. So I think we're getting close to the end of the first half hour of the program, Jim.
We are.
Did you want to throw out that phone number for Radiothon one more time? Have you got that handy?
I should have it memorized, but I don't. Just a second.
I'm sure it's close by.
Got it. Thank you. Of course, you put 306 in front of it when you're in Regina now. And so it's 306-525-7274. And we've got Ron Bocking standing by to answer the phone and take your pledge. And you don't have to pay right away. You can bring a check or the money in when it's convenient for you. Or you can give them your credit card, or you can get online. You can actually you can donate online if you like as well. Just go to our webpage at cjtr.ca and follow the links, and you will be able to do that at your own convenience. And you know, we can't say enough about the many advantages and reasons why we need to support CJTR, Regina Community Radio. This program is just one of them, and the fantastic music scene that CJTR helps support is another reason. I was at the Wind-Up Radiothon concert last night, it wasn't exactly a concert. It was a gathering. It was a celebration. There was comedy, and it finished up with Two Beats and a Hat and just some amazing electronic music. And it's hard to describe, Gord. It was just it was wonderful. It was wonderful, and it was a great expression of the community that exists as part of and because of CJTR. But on that note, we'll go to the break, and I have picked some music from the special CD, the songs of Bob Dylan. It was produced by Amnesty International, or for Amnesty International. It's called Chimes of Freedom, and it's I don't know how many songs of Bob Dylan that have been covered by a variety of artists, and we're going to hear a song from Billy Bragg when we come back from the break.
Lay down your weary tune, lay down. Lay down the song you strung, and rest yourself neath the strength of streams. No voice can hope to hum. Struck by the sounds before the sun, I knew the night had gone. The morning breeze like a bugle blew against the drums of the dawn. Lay down your weary tune, lay down. Lay down the song you strung, and rest yourself neath the strength of streams. Voice can hope to come. The ocean wild like an accordion played, the seaweeds woven strands, the crashing waves like the cymbals crashed against the rocks and the sands. Weighed down your down the song you strung, and rest yourself neath the strength of streams. No voice can hope to hum. I stood unwound beneath the sky, the clouds unbound by laws, the crying like a trumpet sang, and as for your word, pulls me down your weary to lay down. Lay down the song you've strung, and rest yourself neath the strength of streams. No voice can hope to hum. Last of leaves fell from the trees, clung to new love's breast. The branches bare like a banjo played, the winds that listen the best. Lay down your weary tune, lay down. Lay down the song you strung, and rest yourself neath the strength of streams.
voice can hope to hum. A case down in the river's mirror watched its winding strung. The water smooth ran like a hymn, and like a harp did come. Lay down your weary tune, lay down, lay down the song you've strung, and rest yourself neath the strength of streams. No voice can hope to hum.
And we're back with the second half of Human Rights Radio, and I'm Jim Hutchings with Gordon Barnes, and we're into the we're in the last day of Radiothon, and we'll give you a little more detail about that later on. But just thought I would mention there's an event that's going to happen at Campion College in the education auditorium. They're going to have Joseph Boyden there to speak to them. He's the fellow who wrote The Orenda and also Three Day Road. Now, Three Day Road, if you haven't read it, is the first book that was featured in the Amnesty Book Club. And I wrote that. It's a good read. It's a little tough.
Mm.
You know, I guess I'd warn people that... there might be parts of it that you don't like very much, so yeah. just a little warning there. But fantastic story.
It is. He's an amazing author.
Yeah. I haven't read The Orenda yet, so he is going to be there on October 16th at 7:30 p.m. at the Education Auditorium, and he's a very interesting guy for sure. And parking is available in lots 13 and 14, which is always a good thing. And, Gord, we've got a big thing coming up for Amnesty here in the very near future.
Right. So you mentioned that special lecture is October 16th.
Yes.
And then just a couple days later, on Saturday, October 18th, in Humboldt, Amnesty International is having our third annual Get Active with Amnesty Provincial Conference. So Humboldt's sort of a couple hours north of Regina and... just over an hour east of Saskatoon. It's a very welcoming community. We're going to be having some great workshops, tremendous speakers, and I'd encourage people to go to the Amnesty International website, amnestysaskatchewan.ca. You'll find out all the details in terms of the agenda and be able to pre-register online. That's important to do because... it really helps us figure out where we need to have the various workshops scheduled in terms of room size, and also know how many people are coming for lunch, and that helps a lot. So just to highlight some of the people who are coming to be special guests at the conference, the first one I'd mention is a woman who's on the Amnesty International Canada Board of Directors. She's elected board member, Josa Manzanella. She lives in Winnipeg and has got an amazing background in terms of her human rights work, both at the community and at the international level.
We met her in Ottawa, didn't we, Gordon?
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When we were there at the annual meeting when she was first elected a couple years ago. And we're really pleased that she'll be coming over for the conference, along with at least one other person from Winnipeg who will be coming with her. So it's going to be great to see them. The other two people that are key resources for the conference are, first of all, Jackie Hansen, who's mm-hmm. been on this program.
Yes.
Some people may remember if you mm-hmm. were listening in about a year ago. She was a special guest on Human Rights Radio. She's a staff person... who works on women's human rights issues for Amnesty International Canada. She's the lead campaigner around our Stop Torture campaign. And Jackie is really creative, full of energy, And I mean, if there's any opportunity to get to an event that Jack is involved with, I'd encourage people to do so.
Really good speaker.
So, yes, that's right. And the other person who's going to be coming from the Amnesty Canada staff is Lily Mawson. And Lily is a really wonderful individual. She's great at group facilitation, skills building, and she's going to be sharing in three different workshops her experiences. And I was looking just this morning. There's a lot of interest in her workshops, and I'm glad to see that, because I think people will get a lot out of them. She's got a lot of experience and energy as well. I just saw her, actually, a few weeks ago. I was at a meeting with other Amnesty International Canada field workers. We got together in Ottawa, a once-a-year event, and had some more learning ourselves about human rights issues and skills building. And looking forward to Lily coming to our provincial conference as well. So as I mentioned, you can go online and register. All the information's at our website at Amnesty International, or it's amnestysaskatchewan.ca, and easy to find on the internet. It's going to be a great event. So
one thing I notice on that site, Cord, though, is if someone is really not that conversant with what Amnesty is all about, we've got some sessions at this particular conference that kind of lay out what Amnesty is all about. It's sort of for people who don't know.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to be a good sort of mix of opportunities for people who might be new to Amnesty, and also, you know, people who have been involved for many years. So looking forward to it. So there's another thing I'd like to mention in terms of upcoming events, and I don't have a specific date yet, but it's really worth mentioning on this program that the University of Regina Press, and I have to say I'm very, very impressed with the University of Regina Press and their publishing list, their book list, has a new book coming out by a Canadian-Iranian philosopher, and he actually, it'll be coming out on, the release date is October 10th. He actually was arrested and detained and was in solitary confinement in Iran's infamous Evin prison. This author is just an incredibly prominent promoter of intercultural dialogue, a philosopher of nonviolence in the tradition of Tolstoy and Gandhi. And he was hardly someone that would ever pose a threat to a country's security. Yet the Iranian authorities accused him of spying. And at the time when he was arrested and imprisoned, a petition was organized by a large number of international organizations, including Amnesty International. And finally, after a lot of work in 2006, without ever having officially been charged, he was released. He's a professor at the York University in Toronto, and his new book is called Time Will Say Nothing, A Philosopher Survives an Iranian Prison. And people might be wondering, so what's his name? Because I've been putting that off to the very end. It's a little tough. It's Ramin, and his last name is J-A-H-A-N-B-E-G-L-O-O. So I'm really nervous about getting that pronunciation wrong. So
we won't judge you, Gord. give it a shot.
But I think people will find this really interesting. I actually got a copy of the book, an advanced copy for review purposes, and sort of in the process of writing something for that It was one of the people that he was one of the people that Amnesty letter writers will have written appeals about back in 2006, and to have you know, an opportunity to hear him and read his book is going to be quite exciting. I know from the University of Regina Press, they are organizing a book tour as part of the release of this particular book. And again, I want to pay a particular tribute to the University of Regina Press. They're really getting recognized across Canada and even internationally for their publishing list, and good for them. I don't know, Jim, are you wanting to take a stab at the pronunciation of Ramin's?
I'll give it a try.
Okay.
Jahan Beglu.
Thank you. Thank you. You're much better at this than I am.
I'm not going to try it again.
No, you're yeah. As I say, you've got a lot of good experience with this.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, definitely worthwhile. Definitely worthwhile to paying attention to here. It's amazing how these incidents where people are confined, they're detained, and the rule of law just seems to have no bearing whatsoever.
Yeah,
you know, they have a legal system, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and in that case, he was never charged with anything. You know, and just reflecting on this particular story, it is not unlike the story of Hamid Ghashami Shaw, which we've talked about on this program before,
right.
And we had him as a guest via Skype at our Regina Group annual meeting, because he was also an Iranian-Canadian citizen, detained in Evan Prison, eventually released after a lot of campaigning, but it took a lot of work, and unfortunately, in many cases, the people who have sent appeals and written letters and all the rest have not been successful. There have been a large number of executions in Iran, so this is serious stuff in terms of human rights issues there, and we need to keep the focus on what's going on. There's one woman who's currently in prison who there's a fear that she will be executed sometime next week, and you know, she is accused of the murder of somebody who raped her, and yet she's now going to be executed herself. We're encouraging people to go online and find that case as well and send appeals, because it is very urgent that she get enough support that that is stopped. So I think we're going to turn away from that discussion for a bit, and Jim, you were going to share a little bit of an update. Back in the spring, we talked and heard a lot about the Bring Back Our Girls campaign, and there's been an update provided by Jackie Hansen, our campaigner, staff campaigner, who I mentioned earlier, and you were going to share something about that.
Yes. You'll notice we haven't heard much about it lately, and I think what happens there is that sometimes issues are so complicated, it's difficult to put that 30-second soundbite together or you know, explain something in a very short time. So lots of times our news media, especially radio and television, they kind of give up on it because it's so hard to understand. But Jacqueline Hansen has put together something for us, and she writes, "The disappearance of more than 270 Nigerian schoolgirls in April of this year led to a worldwide social media campaign to bring back our girls. Tens of thousands of Amnesty International supporters signed our petition targeted at the Nigerian authorities. The world watched and waited. Then the social media campaign faded and the issue disappeared from the headlines. 5 months later, the girls are still missing, and in the intervening months, many more girls, boys, women and men have been kidnapped by Boko Haram fighters. Amnesty International has called on the Nigerian government to do its utmost to safely bring back the girls. Many governments provided support to the Nigerian authorities to assist in the search, and 5 months later, it frustratingly feels like we are no closer to finding the girls. If only finding and bringing them home was as easy as using a high-tech satellite to locate them, and more high-tech equipment to extract them from where they are held captive, and bring them home to the open arms of their families. If only it were so simple. But it isn't so simple. To understand why the girls went missing and why it is so difficult to bring them home, we need to look at the context in which the girls were kidnapped. There is a conflict in northeast Nigeria, and it continues to escalate. Amnesty International has documented gross violations of human rights by both sides to the armed conflict, Boko Haram and the Nigerian authorities. As the conflict worsens, more people have been kidnapped by Boko Haram. Nigerian forces have been outgunned, outnumbered, and unable to stop the attacks. No one is in a rush to help better arm the Nigerian authorities to fight Boko Haram because of the widespread pattern of human rights abuses at the hands of Nigerian police and military officers. In March of this year, Amnesty International released a report on the escalation of violence in northeast Nigeria and the rising death toll. In the first quarter of the year alone, more than 1,500 people had been killed. The report highlighted the systematic pattern of rights abuses and laid out recommendations for both the Nigerian government and Boko Haram to comply with their human rights obligations. And today, Amnesty International released Welcome to Hellfire, documenting the systematic use of torture at the hands of the police and military at detention facilities across Nigeria. Children as young as 12 have been detained and tortured. 50% of Nigerians fear they would be tortured if arrested. The situation is dire. Something needs to change. It is true that the schoolgirls are not home with their families, that torture is rampant, and that the scale of rights violations in Nigeria has reached crisis levels. But there is hope. Amnesty International continues to expose rights violations in Nigeria. We shine a light on detention facilities where torture is occurring in hopes that once authorities know the world is watching, the torture will stop. We take action on the cases of individuals, including Moses Atagbuba, who was arrested, tortured, and sentenced to death when he was only a teenager. And we continue to call on the authorities to bring back the Nigerian schoolgirls. So we ask you, our listeners, and our fellow Amnesty members to learn more, sign a petition, write a letter to Free Moses, write a letter to a detention center to help stop torture. And you can follow Jackie on Twitter at AI_womensrights or Facebook, or visit our Women's Rights webpage to stay up to date on all the latest news and actions. So, kind of depressing what's going on there, but we have to stay on it.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, that's the best kind of way to describe it. We just need to keep on raising this in terms of the issue of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign and keep it at the forefront. Another bit of news that is kind of current events this week is what's going on in Hong Kong. And, you know, many of us will recall the terrible events that happened in Tiananmen Square years ago. And as a result, when we see what's going on in Hong Kong now with the protests that are largely student-led, we all have to be concerned and nervous on behalf of the students who are peacefully protesting, and they are getting large support from residents of Hong Kong, calling for democracy and
yeah, I think the authorities have been kind of surprised by this. I think they were expecting that the students would eventually give up and go home, but their treatment of the students. And I think particularly when they went in there with, I think they had rubber bullets and pepper spray. They went in, they came in with huge containers of pepper spray, and the students and other protesters responded with umbrellas, you know, to ward off the huge amount of pepper spray. But the other residents of Hong Kong were just appalled by the police treatment of the protesters. So the police have scaled back things considerably. And the Chinese authorities, this is from our Amnesty page, the Chinese authorities must immediately and unconditionally release all those detained for peacefully showing support for pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong. At least 20 people have been detained by police in several cities in mainland China. Well, that's interesting. So the protest is spreading from Hong Kong, which is, I guess you would describe it as semi-autonomous, but spreading to mainland China. And this must worry the authorities in China a little bit to see this sort of thing happening. So they've been posting pictures online with messages of support for the protesters, shaving their heads in solidarity, and they're planning to travel to Hong Kong to participate in the protests. So a further 60 have been called in for questioning by the authorities, known as being invited for tea. So you don't want to be invited for tea by the authorities. A further, the rounding up of activists in mainland China only underlines why so many people in Hong Kong fear the growing control Beijing has in their city's affairs. This is said by William Ni, a China researcher at Amnesty International. The fundamental freedoms being exercised by hundreds of thousands of people in Hong Kong continue to be denied to those in mainland China. So that's just kind of a quick look at what's going on in China. It's getting interesting there. It's getting interesting. Of course, the big conflict in Hong Kong is the authorities want to be able to vet all the candidates for the upcoming elections, and the residents want completely free elections. So it's a tough place to be.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. I'm just going to quickly mention the number to call for Radiothon, 306-525-7274. Ron Bakken is standing by to take your call, take your pledge. And if you pledge $25, you will be entered into the daily draw, plus into the grand prize draw for the trip to Puerto Vallarta, vacation for two at the four-star Canto del Sol Plaza Vallarta in Puerto Vallarta, a week filled with sunshine, fun, and relaxation, trip courtesy of Carlson Wagenlee Rickert Travel and Nolly Tours. This grand prize draw would be held at 5 p.m. Friday, October 24th, during the CJTR afternoon show. So that's to give anybody that makes a pledge a chance to honor their pledge. And actually, from today on until noon on October 24th, I believe, you can still contribute. So if you decide, if you wake up on the morning of Friday, October 24th, and jeepers, I really need to be in that draw, all you have to do is get down here with your $25 or get on the website and give your $25 and you can still get into that draw. But if you pledge today, then you're eligible for the daily draw for the chocolates from Bernard Calabot. At any rate, I think we've run out of time, Gord, so I just have enough time left to say that Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."